Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Couch Confidentials brought to you by MarTech Therapy. I'm your host, Matthew Niederberger, and today we're going to be answering the question, why collecting data is so difficult? There are so many things to keep in mind when we're collecting data. Technically speaking, it might be one of the easiest things to do, and putting it into reports might be an easy thing to do. But my guest today is going to help us figure out what it takes to really get value out of your data. He's written the book, The Analytics Implementation Workbook. And again, I wish this book would have existed around 10, 15 years ago when I was actively working on implementations. It would have saved me a lot of headaches. But I'm very happy to have him in the show today and to get to pick his brain, his thoughts around this book and some of this 30-day challenge that he's working on now on building out actual tracking plans for some of the major brands as he takes you through a step-by-step process of how he actually puts his own writing, his own skills to work in a practical sense. And I think that's a fantastic way to share your knowledge. And so let's get started. Hey, Timo, thanks for joining. Like I said in the intro, we're here to answer some questions about why collecting data, doing implementations can be more difficult than it seems. You and I think both come from a period in the Wild West where I think the motto was track everything, we'll sort it out later. But I think times have changed and your book definitely goes to prove that there's more value to be gained by putting some more effort into generating a tracking plan.
That's true. I think it was always debated, even like I would say 5-6 years ago, I was already in conversations with people where like we always had these two groups with, oh, we really want to make sure. So let's say it doesn't hurt. Let's get it. It might become relevant in the future. And then the other camp was like, no, everything explicit and so on. But even like, I think the problem was, and this at some point really kicked things off. I was always in the explicit camp. So I always said like, no, it definitely makes sense to think about what you should track. But at some point I had to, to realize or to be honest that what I do explicitly produces the same not so good output. So I could have also just switched to track everything, because I think the one thing that at some point I realized was when you track clicks, it doesn't tell you anything about the business. So the tracking clicks is too far away from product insights, from marketing insights, and from business insights. And this then started the whole thought process that in the end then became the book and now becomes the kind of series that I'm doing right now, where I apply this kind of thing to, okay, I pretend I have to do an analytics setup for today. I did it for Canva. I recorded this one. So how would I approach that? And the interesting thing, especially these tools, when you don't have this mindset, it can drive you crazy. So because like, what would you track? Do you track every time someone changes a color? And do you track when they apply a new filter on an image and so on? Yeah. I mean, you would be tempted to do something like this. But obviously, what does, when someone removes a background, what does it tell you about the product success? What does it tell you about the business success? And I even picked an example where it's not so far away. I mean, background removal is a nice thing. So you definitely might stick with it.
That's a premium feature, I believe, as well.
Yeah, I think it's a pro feature. So I think you don't even get it when you have a free plan. So, but still, what does it tell? Does it tell you anything about the success of a product? I guess not. What tells you something about the success of a product? When someone downloads something that they have created. This is the first signal that tells you something about, oh, this looks like they made something successful for them.
Yeah. That's
And I think this was the perspective that at some point where I had to reset myself with the data generation or data collection that I did before, where it was too granular. It was too far away from any kind of, benefit.
Oh, definitely. And just jumping back to the Canva, because I'm an active Canva user. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's our DNA being in this industry too long. We automatically start thinking about, oh, what other ways can we do to improve it? And I actually had trouble with the background remover a couple of days ago with I needed a company logo and it was very poor quality. And I thought, Oh, no, sorry. No, I need to refer that. That was with upscaling. That's another one of their pro features.
Yeah.
But I think the downloading one is quite interesting because what really triggers me when I download, what attracts my eye is the amount of money, supposedly, I have saved with some of their pro features. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I love this all the time when I see it. I was like, okay, I really want to congratulate the product person who built this in.
Yeah. Because that's one of the values you're sending along, I take it? Yeah. I mean, that's so tangible.
I'm sending along, so I was, let's say, the plan that I created. But interestingly, so this is again the next thing, what I want to show in the series is, this is also like why I do it a little bit differently. I mean, I did some stuff before where I was live building or kind of live building the whole tracking plan. So the first draft. So when I create I think I developed this in this week that I'm trying to get away from this term, I'm creating a tracking plan. It's more like that I say I'm creating an analytic setup. Because obviously, to define what you have to track or what kind of data you have to collect is part of it. But there's a lot of thinking included where you think about, okay, what are the different kind of analysis scenarios later? So where can we actually really see how growth is working and so on? So, but when I create these things, there are obviously different phases. So I do some refactoring and let's say refinements along the way. And with that, usually I come up to some new ideas. And so, for example, like the videos that I'm creating right now, I don't do the draft fast, which is like the first phase for me where I sketch out how I would actually approach it, like the brainstorming session. And I give it to an Gen AI model. So I say, okay, Gen AI model, do the brainstorming for me, and then we can start working on it. And so with that, I open up that I can spend more time on design decisions. So that I say, okay, do we actually need this? Or maybe should we go deeper here? Or maybe how important? So for example, with Canva today was the question, should I highlight the brand kit and the template? So are these strong enough that we track them as their own events? Which, let's say, when someone just listened to this and have no background in collecting data, it's totally ridiculous to think about this granular. But it has quite an impact because is it important enough that you surface it in an analytics tool later, or let's say, or even in CDP? Is it important enough that you surface it in a CDP to make it available to all the other systems that are behind it? Can you create marketing use cases or other product use cases based on this data? So do you actually really need it, or can you stuck it in the other with other events? So can you, because for example, if someone is using a brand provided template, you can always use it as a property with another event. So you don't really need it standalone. But what I was discussing today in the video was like, it's a strategic asset. I knew this because I was listening to a podcast interview from the CEO of Canva, where she said this move to go more enterprise, and they are like an essential thing for enterprise for them, is that they provide the possibility for the brand team to create assets for the other persons in the company to then build their stuff based on the assets. Yeah. And so therefore I knew, okay, it has a strategic value, and I can apply the strategic value in my analytics setup. And I think this was the interesting thing. When I was starting the whole exercise on Monday, I thought I might become pretty repetitive after two or three. The interesting thing is I started to develop a new angle. And this was like, hey, why not bring in the current strategic product direction that the product is taking and bring it into the analytics setup? And to, on the one hand, cover the core function.
That's quite abstract. Can we just dive into that? How do you define that, though?
So I can give you an example. So when I was doing the Asana one, Asana is a classic task management tool or project management tool. If you want to track this, it's pretty straightforward. You track the task. That's it. That's the heartbeat of the whole thing. So this is like, if you want to have a data heartbeat, that's like you track the task created, assigned, completed, commented, whatever. Then you maybe do a little bit basic around that. So you have the user. So you want to see, okay, when users are created. Maybe you want to see when an account is created, adding more users, because this gives you some signals around revenue. You can just do this. Then you have the core of the business. The interesting part was now, what if I take it a step further? So I looked on the Asana website and was looking, okay, what are they trying right now to make their product looking different? I mean, task management is a good example because like there's a new task management tool every week. So like they're all competing on the same kind of
every programming tutorials around build a task manager. Yeah,
yeah. This is the same. So maybe this is the big mistake with programming tutorials. Why we see so many task management, because you already created the first example. So I was looking for, what are they trying right now to make it different? So I went on the website, and on the website they were writing, we connect work with goals, and we trying to speed up work with workflows. So this, they formulated better. I had to look it up. So they have a good subline that really explains what they're trying to do. And I thought, this is interesting, because now we see, based, let's say, on top of these core features, they're adding something which they believe is a strategic move for the future to set them apart from the others. One is like, connect the current work to work towards a goal. And then the other thing is like, to speed up, or let's say, to reduce overhead and time in the tool by using workflows. And so on. And then I spin the whole analytics strategy around that, where I thought, the interesting thing is what I wanted to show is like, you don't have to extend your whole setup a lot. So there are just some parts where you have to add another property. So for example, has this task been created by a workflow or by a user? Because then you can do a really cool, interesting thing. You can calculate a metric where you can say on a project, by the amount of tasks being created, you can see how much has been happening automatically, how much has been happening, doing manually. And then you could even feed this back to the user where you can say, look, you have an automation grade of 15% in your projects. You can move it up to 40% because we also measure how many tasks have been copied or duplicated. And this gives us an indication that you seem to reuse this stuff. Why don't you put it in a workflow? Why can we make it easier? And there you come in this I have a product background, where you come in this magic thing where you can collect specific data that in the end will influence how the product can work. And so you can create this nice spin between data feedback, giving user feedback, and then user using more and the data can give this thing back and so on.
But just to kind of challenge that, not all tasks are created equal. I know, you have the poker approach within Scrum, where you score certain tasks on their complexity. How would you, is that something? I don't think Asana has out of the box, and I'm kind of pushing it here.
I don't think so.
But would that be kind of an added value to make that data around task completion, be it workflow or human, even more accurate?
It could be. I think this is the interesting thing. This is also like the interesting abstraction that you from the data side have to make a decision about. When I want to collect a data point, I always have to make, at least I have to think about, what kind of value can this provide for further steps? So Yeah, exactly. So do I enable a creation of an audience that could be interesting for marketing or growth or customer success? Could I create, a specific activity which then helps me to understand user progress better? So like how I understand the product is I want to support users to make progress. This is how I understand what product should do. So can this data point help me to understand if people are making progress in the right kind of direction? If all this is not true, then it's already a candidate where I can think about maybe this is not even necessary. Maybe I don't really need it. Sometimes I still track the stuff because I have the feeling that there could be something, but I don't see it yet. So this stuff still happens that I say, yeah, come on, let's implement it still. We might get to something.
Yeah.
But sometimes we don't get to something. So then we say, okay, let's remove it after 4 months again, because like this didn't provide any value.
No, but it is making timely, maybe not the right use, but a timely use of resources. I mean, once you do get commitment from engineering to implement this, just come down the hallway 2 weeks later and say, we forgot one of the parameters there. Can you add, you're going to put a lot of people on their back heels and working against you. So a little bit more in the beginning might not be such a bad issue, but
let me add one thing, which is like, I think really important for me is like, if you really want to have a successful data setup, you have to have a culture that enables refinement of this. So the companies who where the you were, and this happens quite often. So that where you say you have this window of opportunity that you now get some tracking attention, and then what's happening? Natural reflex, you stuff as much as possible in this window because you say this is a once in a lifetime opportunity.
Yeah,
and then this is not how it works. Even like, I mean, I know other data people will say, yeah, but you should really be good enough to come up with a lot of questions before and that you want to answer. And so you can come up with a solid setup. I myself, I'm doing this stuff for 16 years. I always come up 2 weeks later with something. This angle would be interesting.
Yeah.
Because you start to work with the data and then you immediately feel, oh, I would love to break it down by this. And then it's not there. So you have to have the culture and the possibility that this can be done in a very short amount of time.
Absolutely great. I have the same with conversations or when I want to make a witty comment, you know, it's like 10 minutes after the whole conversation. I'm like, oh, I should have said that. No, that would have been a lot more to the point or more funnier. But I mean, you say that this is not how it should happen, but reality kind of paints a different picture. I've seen a lot of situations where you do only get that one, you know, once a quarter window of window of opportunity to put in your tracking plan. How do you see the I mean, maybe it's just this is like an own goal I'm scoring here. How do you see the impact performance between those type of companies? I it's easy for us to say, hey, we need to be more flexible. We need to have daily releases, be able to change a tracking plan on the turn of a dime. But that's usually not the case. What are your experiences around that in terms of success with companies with poor tracking plans then? Or incomplete, sorry. That's maybe more.
Yeah, no. I mean, yeah, or like incomplete analytics setups or data setups in general. I think this is a super interesting question. I think we don't ask this question often enough. I think there are definitely company and business models where it actually doesn't make a difference. Where like a poor analytics or data setup just doesn't really move the needle.
Yeah.
Because like they have such a solid, let's say, go-to-market strategy where data could improve a little bit, but it would not improve significantly. And in these companies, I would even say, so what? I mean, it's okay. So you can do it, but it's not really relevant. And I think to know this, what kind of impact data can have, is super essential when you start to before you start to work with it.
But now you're kind of drawing the line between data that you want to collect into, and additionally to the data that you're already collecting, let's say in some backend systems. For instance, if you're working with subscription models, one client now working with ChargeBee, they can get a lot of data out of ChargeBee. They don't need additional information on the front end or in other places to enrich that to make the business decisions on how to move forward.
For me, maybe this is really what has changed for me in the last 3 years most significantly. Data collection is just one thing. It's just one part of the whole thing. For me, the bigger data picture is much more important. Even when I get massive amounts of data from ChargeBee, and I worked in ChargeBee projects, so I know how much data you can get. Even there is no guarantee that this gets you any kind of useful stuff. As long as you don't really use it to understand how revenue movement is working and you put it into action. So even when you create this, I mean, there are tools for it. So they do it out of the box. So you look at it and say, oh, look, this is how our subscription movement looks like in the last month or in the last 6 months. If you don't apply it in your strategy, you can also read it like a newspaper, or you can just spend time with a podcast at the same time. So the analysis only makes sense when you translate it into operations. And I think we all know this. Everyone who works in data, I think, is aware of that. But I think for me, since I'm doing this already for quite some time, this now really becomes the leading factor in everything. When I talk to companies, the first questions that I ask about is like, how do you put it into action? So how would you envision a world when I give you this insight, what would you do?
Exactly.
Yeah. But this is quite good because like sometimes the good thing is like when people see these scenarios, they get a better idea that they're actually far away from this, that they are. And then I can tell them, when you're not there, don't just give the money to me and get this kind of setup. It doesn't make sense. Prepare the other things that you're ready for this, and then you can start to invest in things.
Yeah.
Because
and I had the same thing with I think it was like 10 years ago with a customer, and they had these individual products team. So they had their entire website. They had one for the product list page, had their own product team, product detail page, et cetera. So every step of that flow had their own product team. And at that time, we were I was merging two Google Tag Manager containers. I think it was a total of like 1,500 elements combined in two. Nice. So this really needed cleaning up. But what I also noticed was this eagerness. That's the word. Eagerness from these product teams to say, hey, how can we get involved? And I found this very interesting at the time. So it came down to teaching them, not necessarily your strategy, but you know, the basic Google Analytics strategy at the time. You had events, EAI was the, so you had the event name, you had the event action.
Oh yeah, the three dimensions of events.
Exactly. So
category action label.
Category action label, that's the one. And I was helping them get to grips on, all right, you're rolling out a new feature. Your goal as a product team is to prove its value, to make sure that all the time and money that you've spent into developing this feature can be put into numbers to see, hey, is it having a positive effect on maybe a P&L or the click-through rates from your section to another section? And so giving them the oars to row with made my life a whole lot easier. And the only process that I would just come in, check, and kind of challenge them, hey, you know, is this format going to work? But it's funny that even with Google Tag Manager, at the time, data quality was such a huge issue with Google Analytics. Like you said, you came in, you tagged everything, you started collecting pretty much everything you can. Nobody really paid attention to what values were actually being pushed into those parameters. But now with AI, we're exposing it even more on all these data flaws. And I know you're dabbling a little bit with AI as well, because I think I posted this on LinkedIn. I was so impressed by one of your readers of the book had put your book into an LLM. And can you tell us a little bit more about what he did? Because I found this really fascinating.
Oh, me too. I was doing some interviews with people who bought the book, and I hope they read the book. And so to just get some classic product research. And I had a really, really fun conversation with someone. So first of all, like I asked him, okay, why did you buy the book? And he said, I hate the topic. I really love that. Then the other thing that he said is like, okay, so because I needed to distill specific kind of things out of it. So I think he put it into Notebook LM and then just asked specific kind of questions. And Notebook LM is quite good because it also shows you the reference in the book. So it makes it easy to really dive in. They don't really, really nice in the format, so I tested it afterwards too. So it would be, so they translate the whole PDF into full text. And so then on the left, you have the full text. You still see the original part from the book, but it's not formatted. So it's a bit, I found it a bit difficult to work with it. So I was hoping, for example, I can find some illustrations easier when I was looking for some, when I was writing the blog post. That doesn't really work.
Yeah, because your book is now 528 pages, I believe.
Yeah, 530 pages. So and I'm just writing the final chapter, so it will end up around, let's say, 580 or so. So yeah, it's quite a lot to get through. This was his problem. He said, like, I don't have the bandwidth to reach 580. So this was his approach, and then I thought, okay, that's interesting. So let's take it a step further. And so you have to create an optimized version for it, because like the big one, I think it's the book itself is 150 megabytes. So this doesn't work as context usually in the most, it's too big. So I created a minimized version that reduces image quality, which is not so important in this case. And then I put it into Claude in a project. And then I just asked the most obvious question. It was like, look, I have this project. These are the use cases. Create me a tracking plan. And what blew me away was it took everything what was in the book. So it took, so I have this framework that I've developed in the book, which is like the double three layer framework, which has like, okay, I have a customer layer, a product layer, and an interaction layer.
Uh-huh.
And then within these layers have entities, activities, and properties. It applied everything nicely. It showed me, hey, look, these are the product entities that I picked. These are the different kind of activities. And it was, for a first version, how I would create a first version, it was 90-95% match.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my God. Because I tested this before. So before I tested different approaches with custom GPTs and so on to try if I can mimic tracking plan creation. I never came up with the idea to put my book in there. So I think this was the mistake. So I think I put some posts that I had on Substack in this and was trying if it can come close. But this looks like was not enough context. So the book really created the context that then enabled this. And it's quite fascinating. So if you want to create tracking plans how I create, so you can just put it in the book and can just do this. And the interesting thing is, like, it really unlocked this thing, how you can work with nonfiction data books. So I have the SQL book from my friend Agast. So he has a book, SQL Patterns. And so, yeah, I read through it. I scanned through it. So it's a really nice book. But obviously, then when I work on specific problems, I then have a hard time to get out the book, find the right kind of chapter and so on. So it takes a lot of work.
And apply it to the case that you're working on. Yeah.
And now what I can do is with this background, so I have a project in Claude where I have SQL patterns in. So every time when I finish, for example, a DBT model, I sometimes just put in the DBT model that I just created and say, like, hey, can you please check with a guest books if you find a SQL pattern that I can improve? And sometimes it does.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
I heard yesterday from Alistair Kroll. He used to write the book, Lean Analytics, together with another author. And he told me that O'Reilly actually has this portal where you can query through LLM all their books. And he mentioned it, not necessarily because of that approach, but the payment model behind it, that O'Reilly actually pays these authors if any content of their book gets queried and used in a response. So I found that quite interesting. But
that's interesting. Yeah.
But yeah, it's wow. That opens up a whole can of knowledge for you to use on the workflow.
Exactly. And also, like, for authors, it's also changed a little bit. Like, I mean, like, for example, the next thing that I was thinking about, like, I think I have to add a license statement when people buy my book. Yeah, because, like, look, for me, the most important part is that people get value out of it. So if you as a private person buy the book, put it in any kind of LMN, creates 20 tracking plans with that just to exercise it, this is what I want to achieve. If you're an agency and you buy my book and you start to sell the stuff, this is a different topic. I don't really have a big problem. So I know, for example, that some agencies use my approaches that I use internally as their kind of framework, which in the end is cool. I mean, it's like, I definitely like it, but I still have to think about it. So, and I don't really have to come up with something like this, but the whole thing will change. I think this is the interesting thing. I still believe, so, I mean, I don't know. So it's super hard to predict this in the future, but the interesting thing is, like, first thing I believe, I mean, now would be the question, okay, do we actually really need books anymore? And so what I would counter, we still need a lot more books because, like, we need this long tail of books. I mean, the big problem is, like, especially in the data space is, I mean, you made this nice YouTube video with different kind of, so you showed different kind of books, which was really nice. But the problem is, for specific topics, let's say, take the CDP topic, take product analytics, there are three books out there.
Yeah, that's
they true. Are super. They are super generic. I mean, take the same thing. So there's like, data engineering. There's the fundamentals of data engineering that Joe has written, which is a really good book. Joe and Matthew. So it's a really good book, but it's the introduction book. So you want to go beyond that. So then you are like, hey, how do we improve data quality in this kind of step? Then what you have to do is, like, you search the internet, then you find some random Medium post, and you cannot read the Medium post because you have to sign up for it, and you're missing the whole bit of context. So I think there's still this big area where I would hope that we make it easier for practitioners to write books, and then we make it easier for people to work with these books, which, for example, LMMs could be. And so this will be really interesting.
Yeah.
So I don't know how it will play out, but...
Well, I think the... Because... the discussion I had yesterday with Alistair Crowley, he he just wrote a book and he kind of painted the picture around
what kind of book did he write?
Just Evil Enough. That was the title of his book. Okay. And it is around marketing techniques that kind of border on creativity and just legal. So he goes into a few cases. I think we would call it, he didn't want me to use the word growth because he didn't. I think I would compare the most to growth hacking. What are some smart ways for you to kind of get your business going? And he gave me two examples yesterday. One was with a guy who was starting a storage company, and he would buy, I think he said $500 worth on chalk. And throughout Boston, on the road, just on the pavement, he would write down, hey, you know, for all these student places, store your stuff for the summer at this, and just a really simple URL.
Nice.
And now his company with storage, not just for the students, now is worth more than $75 million. Yeah. And he started out with a box of chalks to get traction. And the other one was the drywalling. Mm-hmm. I tried to translate what that is. A guy who used to work in the data industry wanted to start something different, and he focused his attention on the frustrations he had with poor drywalling. So he created a business, but he quickly came to the realization that sending out samples to contractors was quite a difficult thing. So he used his ingenuity, and that this is part of that Just Evil Enough. He sent all his stuff to Amazon and all his samples. And you can buy, at the time, you could buy his samples for 99 cents. But then Amazon has the stuff in their warehouse and they have to ship it for free. So instead of hiring someone to process all the sample requests within his company, take care of all the shipping, the contracts with FedEx, with all these companies. Yeah. Sorry, I need the coffee here. He just sent everything to Amazon. And now they're responsible for shipping it out. He doesn't care. He's not going to make any money off those samples, but he's getting it out there. So he's sending all his contractors to Amazon and say, hey, just go to Amazon, buy the sample there. I think the price is up to $275 now because maybe Amazon was kind of figuring out what's going on. Yeah. But there was a reason behind. But it's interesting to see. Yeah. But he also mentioned about the topic you're discussing, about all this knowledge that you're putting into, you know, you've written down, according to the website, 20 years of your knowledge into a book. And I think your worry is valid that, you know, if agencies do get their hands on this and use it without properly licensing, referencing anything that benefits you, your knowledge is not done in my eyes. And
I asked Claude about it, so I can tell you what Claude told me.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just finish it. He said, authors need to start putting, we'll probably see authors putting their stuff behind logins now to better protect their IP from the likes of, from scraping by the open AIs in the world, but also being able to potentially you yourself offering that kind of service, saying, hey, I spoke to a guy who's also written a book, my next door neighbor. He said, what can I do with AI in my book? And I said, well, why didn't, I told him your story. And I said, you need to investigate if you can connect your book to an LLM and then find a way to enrich it with other databases, because he's in real estate, with other databases that you can get that data in there and build out these proposals for development. And it's... it's funny how one little idea from one of your readers is kind of sparking creativity in mine. But I'm very curious to hear what Claude said actually about.
Yeah, so Claude's proposal, it was also like a good proposal, but I like the other idea because like I was tinkering with similar ideas. I get to this in a second. So Claude's feedback was you have to strengthen your brand. So like you use a framework in your book, and so you have to make sure that you put stuff out there that makes visible for everyone, if there's like someone mentioned the double three layer framework, that this is actually your framework, which definitely was a good idea. So I don't really do this a lot. So I use it sometimes, but more like by accident. And then I thought, okay, I haven't done it yet. I should do it on the weekend. So really, like, put on at least a page on my website. Yeah. So I'm, at least in the videos now, I'm mentioning it all the time because of the conversation that I had with Claude. Because then, even like when someone picks it up, the model will always spill it out as the double three-layer framework. This is the nice thing. So because I mention it and call it like this in the book. But I also like this other idea to really, to in the end, like just enhance the experience. I think, so for example, there's like the 37 signals people have. They have this one project that they call Once, where they create this software project that you can just buy once, not the subscription, and you can just use it. And they, for example, they have a one where you can publish books on the internet. And there you can also put it behind a authentication and so on.
Yeah.
So this was something that I definitely wanted to test. And then obviously I can also, I mean, I have the means to also create potentially a own agent. One of the tricky things that I discovered is Anthropic did a really good job what they do with Claude in the front end. So how Claude is handling context in the front end or in the product. With projects, does it in a really smart way, because when I'm trying this against the API, the results are not as good as they are on the front end.
Okay.
So I did it, like I did some experiments with the API, and it's okay, but it doesn't get the quality as it has in the front end. So I have to figure out
what is that a missing parameter in the API, or?
No, I think they just prepare the context that I provide in a slightly different way. Maybe they enrich it to some degree. Maybe they enrich it. This would be the interesting thing, though. I still have to ask people when they do the same thing that I did if they come to the same results. What they could do, which I think they do, at least ChatGPT does it, that it takes your whole conversation, all the other stuff that you do in general, to some degree in a reduced form as context. And that, for example, could be the reason that the Claude Claude product itself works better because it had a lot more context from me. And so obviously I work all the day in there. So there's a lot of stuff in there. So this will be interesting to find out if this really works. But it could be definitely a model that you can provide, let's say, a workbench kind of. Yeah. So you have your book and you say, okay, let's put it into practice. This is the workbench. And you can now just, no, you can just run it with, let's say, an agent to create different kind of things. So I would definitely try to get over this. Hey, you can chat with the book. I think this is fine, but this is more a party trick that is cool on the weekend. But you have to go the next step where you can say, okay, these are the different kind of use cases. Now you can easily translate these use cases here.
Yeah.
But this, I think, it's a super interesting opportunity what is happening now when you create, let's say, intellectual products, and this can be a book. So I'm working also like on some video courses again that are based on the book. So what can you do with that to enrich it? And then in the end, like, so why should you go through O'Reilly, honestly? So they take away 80% of your money. They control distribution.
I heard they treat their writers really well. So I have to give them that.
Yeah, sure. But in the end, like, still, like, I mean, I was in talks with some publishers, not O'Reilly.
Yeah.
I might have done O'Reilly because it gives you this credential thing. So you can write, hey, I'm O'Reilly author. So so I was talking with others, but I immediately had the feeling this is not the process for me. Because like obviously they have a say how this should look like, but I have a very clear idea how this should look like. And so I just want to do the stuff how I think they should.
They have the reach. But I think with everything in the market now, we have the means. You have the means to develop your own product based on the knowledge that you have and not necessarily the book. And your book being the product. And coming back to Claude, you know, I've experienced that with OpenAI where it keeps kind of track of who you are. Sometimes I'll just ask them, hey, do you remember who I am?
Yeah.
And it'll spill out kind of a shortened bio. But what I missed with Claude when working in a project is sometimes there's a lapse in the context. It can't refer back to something it generated a few steps earlier.
Oh, you can add them as artifacts to the projects. So you can basically persist them. If you think something is useful, I usually say...
Oh, yeah, no. The
there's artifacts. A small button where you can say, okay, create me an artifact. There's a small button where you can say, add the artifact to the project. And then it usually works a little bit better.
Maybe that's a setting I missed then, because I kept on, I was asking it to, I read a story about a guy who used Claude to build an app over the Christmas holidays, and apparently it's taking off.
I did the same. I built my course platform over the holidays, not with Claude. I started out with Windsurf and then switched to Claude Compose, not to Claude. Then I switched to, I mean, under the hood, they all use Claude mostly, but then I switched back to Cursor. But it worked really well. I mean, I had the same project with developers before where it took 6-7 weeks with the developers. And now it took me also 6-7 weeks, but it was more like I was just giving in, because like you already have this kind of agentic models that can develop stuff and debug stuff on their own.
Yeah.
They are still not there that you, they're really perfect, but I'm testing this space for a long time. I did testing the first agentic development things. These were like party trick. Like, so first thing was really cool, and afterward it got really worse. But now at least they get you to 80%. So I did this nice thing over Christmas where like I had my computer in a different room in my office, and just by now and then when I just walked by the office, I thought, okay, I can go in, I can revisit what they did. It took me 20 seconds. I can put in some new instructions and I go away again for 2 hours. And then I come back and see, oh, okay, looks like this. And so it was a nice, fun development mode. Because like you were just checking in from time to time, and it made quite some progress. At some point, it ran into an issue that it, and then it was starting to destroy things. So really like brute force problem solving, and then it basically like I was like, okay, no, we have to stop this. So you're going in circles, you destroy everything. So I have to go with my development mindset. I have to resolve first. I have to resolve the issue with my knowledge, and then I have to set some more standards for you. Yeah. You have to apply, because like you, this is more too much anarchy you're applying there. But it's really fascinating. I need to try out Cursor then.
Yeah, let me just open it up here.
Cursor is really cool. So you definitely, if you try out Cursor, try the Composer mode. The Composer mode is not really obvious, so you have to, I think, Command I, and then Composer has two modes. It can just propose things. This is the standard mode, and it has an agentic mode that it actually does things.
Okay.
I switched back from agentic back to just writing because it still destroys too many things. So I think I follow other people who invest more time in this. So you can tweak it a lot that you can really stand. You have to put in more guardrails. This is the essential thing. So you really have to tell, you are not allowed to touch this thing. So, like, this is taboo for you. Like for me, for example, on the course platform, it always destroyed my Clerk integration to handle authentication. For some reasons, it had a problem with that. It always
kept on doing
it differently. Yeah. And so I told them, like, you are not allowed to touch any Clerk integration code. And it worked quite well. But then at some point, it still, again, did it. So
you need to repeat it with every prompt, I guess.
No, you can like, in Cursor, you can have a dot cursor rules file, and it takes the cursor rules files with all prompts automatically into context. So there are even repositories with best cursor rules files for
kind
of language and so like. Yeah, it's great. I mean, this is the fun stuff with knowledge work and the internet. Is like people just, they spin up things and they come up as like, and now like
somebody's thought about it before as well. And I see that happening. I mean, the amount of information that is on there, and just to come back with AI, Anil Batra was talking on LinkedIn about how even implementations will be automated in the future. Coming back to your book and all the potential that's in there for creating these web analytics implementations, how do you think we can get it? Do you think that will happen anytime soon where you will create a implementation document and it would actually be able to put that into maybe using something like Claude, say, hey, let's say you have your project files in Claude, you have your app analytics implementation, you say, hey, integrate these two documents together and then do a commit and then publish kind of scenarios.
I saw demos of that. So there are some people working on this and it works quite impressive. But I think now I take a take, which maybe might not be the most popular take, is like, first of all, 90% of analytics setups are completely useless. So therefore you're just optimizing something which is already useless. So it's like, it doesn't really solve a problem. I would more be interested to see how we solve the problem on the other side. So how then we can take the data and then put it into the operational processes. So how to either make it easier for the humans to access this, to really learn from it, or take out the human in the middle and just run some operations independently, which I'm not really sure how long this will take, because like it's a much more scary idea that your marketing execution is just run automatically. But I think
based on stock data, on market movements, on
signaling data and so on. So I mean, obviously attribution models are already, let's say, they are apart from it. So let's say at least like all the automatic attribution models that are running on the advertisement platform, they are already the representation of that. And they work quite well for what they do. So it's definitely interesting. I'm more curious what will happen on this end. I'm not curious what will happen. I mean, obviously, we will also replace data pipeline creation with some automations.
Yeah.
But this is all doesn't make sense if the thing in the end works. So I think the biggest problem, especially in the analytics space, is, and also like I don't really want to criticize a lot, but when you see what people are thinking about, what kind of content they are publishing, this is all about this bubble. Like, how can we do an implementation? So like server-side tagging or whatever. It's like, if you look at it from a big picture perspective, it's completely ridiculous. So it's like it's optimizing for getting a new project, but it doesn't
really
change.
It's a business model.
It's a business model, 100%. But for me, I don't know. It's not about my business model. But yeah,
No. And I think that's why I slowly moved away from it as well, because I found that a lot of companies, they did come to me and say, hey, we need Google Analytics, Google Tag Manager. All right. What's the goal of your business?
Why?
What are you trying? They're like, we don't know. Just implement it.
Yeah.
And it got frustrating to the point where you say, I don't want to say copy and pasting, but it's like, what's that movie? Where everything happens again and again. Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
It just felt the same. Every day felt the same. And it just, it wasn't satisfying me personally. So yeah, I think it's the move now to kind of the tail end of that. Of course, a lot of the tail end data that we are, trying to leverage and get more value out of does depend on the quality that we get at the source. So I'm not going to totally lose sight of what's happening there, because we need to point the finger at someone at some point. Why the data is horrible, but yeah, I think there is a lot of focus on that implementation. It's a starting point.
No, it is, and I think the other thing, this is also like why I wrote the book, is it's not a technical problem. It's just to some degree, of course, there are technical issues, and it is 30% a technical problem, but it's a design problem.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing is, so when I see now like people doing the service, hey, put in your URL and we create a tracking plan for you. This is ridiculous. It doesn't solve any design.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah. There. I saw one or two things. Like there are more to come. I mean, there are lead gen engines. They're really good for this. So you can just collect some leads with it. But it's painting the wrong picture.
Yeah.
So it's
maybe they're using your book behind the scenes.
Potentially. So it's this is why I have to get the license out. So.
But
I cannot enforce it, so it's, therefore it's...
So you're working on a course, you've made a book. That means you have a lot of knowledge inside of you, 20 years of experience. What still inspires you? I mean, you've already mentioned you do read other books, you're influenced by a few other people. But if you could kind of list like one or two people, books, or anything that you've experienced in the last 2 years that have kind of pushed you forward, what would that be?
It's always hard to bring it down to a specific person.
You can go beyond the one and two, because I don't have a favorite band.
This is the same. No, I also don't have a favorite band. So I think the problem is like I immediately forget where I saw it. So usually I just get, so there are still some people on LinkedIn which I really like to read. So maybe if I can name some, like Robert Salen, when he's posting something, he's more like in the, let's say, more data engineering, data platform building space. But I always enjoy, also enjoy when talking to him, but I also chatting with him, but I also enjoy when he's writing, when a guest is something writing. So it's like always, because like he's also like always trying to take a different kind of angle. And there were like Olga, when she's writing about product analytics, I always enjoys like, and then I think there's Paul, who's also writing about product analytics, who always has very controversial takes. So I like this too. So but I always look for, can I get an idea that I can apply to what I'm doing, like to get a different kind of angle to this? So it's more like, not that I find something completely new and completely interesting. It's more like, okay, they followed this kind of idea. Maybe I can apply it to this. So
people who,
I think,
who challenge the status quo.
Yeah, I think metric trees was the big thing for
metric
me.
Metric trees, okay.
Yeah. Because it was more working on this, where I'm actually more concerned about is like, how can we apply this to the business side? And so metric trees was not something new. I actually had them in university. They had a different name there, to Pong's schema or so. And I even used them when I was starting out with analytics, but I lost track with it. So I just forgot about it for some reasons.
Topic at the time.
Yeah, right. But then when Arby came around, was posting more about it, talking more about it, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. It basically solves something that I was thinking about it a lot. And then I did some workshops even with companies with it. And then I saw, okay, it's a really great instrument to align sales, marketing, product, and development on something that everyone understands. Interestingly, when you show how metrics work in relation, people find it a lot easier to understand how data could potentially work for them. And so this was, I think, the big thing that really inspired me. And I'm still doing this even for fun. It might also be, I'm not really sure which angle. I won't write a metric tree book. This would be too flat. So I definitely need to find an angle that's more interesting. I will write more books. This is definitely clear. So the next book that I will write will be about how to apply what comes after the book that I've written before.
Yeah.
So when you have this data, what you actually do with it, that it definitely makes sense. So let's say the product analytics book that I was always hoping to read, but never existed. So this will be the next one.
Excellent. That's great to hear. I'm glad you're not laying down the pen or the keyboard in this case and continuing to write your book.
No, I had so much fun with that. So I was never expecting that I would have fun with these things, but no, this will be my driving.
And the community that's built up around it. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, thanks a lot for your time today. It's really good picking your brain.
Thank you as well.
Around everything. I'm definitely going to try out your book because I did buy it. I'm going to put it into a Notebook LLM or a Claude, actually, and give it a go and see how far I can take it. But thanks a lot again, and I'll see you around on the internets.
Likewise. Thank you.